welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Ending the Ukraine conflict was never going to be easy. Donald Trump now realizes how difficult it is to be a mediator while supporting Ukraine. And if we're to believe the New York Times, this has been an American war from the very start. Crosstalking America's war in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Karen Kwiatkowski, in Mount Jackson. She is a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, having served both NSA and the Office of Secretary of Defense. In Tashkent, we have Michael Rossi. He is a lecturer of political science at Rutgers University. And in Bangkok, we cross to Matthew Arrett. He is a senior fellow at the American University of Moscow and director of the Rising Tide Foundation in Canada. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Karen, let me go to you first in Mount Jackson. Let's take a quick review of this little jewel that the New York Times published about the length of the Warren report. At least that's how I felt. And it was titled The Secret History of the War in Ukraine. Well, for those watching this program and those are on the program, it wasn't much of a secret. I actually didn't learn very much, okay? Some lurid details, some very odd black humor details, but nothing really contextual for me. My main takeaways were they're covering their lower back end. They want to blame Zelensky. They want to blame Ukraine. They want to make sure it's a Biden war, and if it weren't for Donald Trump being elected, maybe things might be different. Not a very well-reasoned article, contradictory all the way through, but it's making the war, at least acknowledging the war is lost. Karen.
Yeah, I think that the New York Times has figured out that they need to publicly get on the right side, so to speak, of where this thing is going. Of course, the war is lost for Ukraine. They don't want to tick off Donald Trump any more than they already have. And in a sense, they did a good job for many people who read the Times, and that's not very many. But Americans are getting the truth that many Americans, I should say many, many in the world already knew, because the information on this was out there. The fact that we were making the targets, we were sharing our intelligence information, we were giving permission for this target and not permission for that target. Even in the occasions when Ukraine's army did something we didn't want them to do, that was very clear. That was reported, not in American media, but it was reported. So the New York Times is covering their own butt, so to speak. They are trying to position themselves for relevancy in the next, 3.5 years or so.
Yeah, and Michael, a thought occurred to me when I was finishing this very long article is that they want to get ahead of this because we're going to learn a whole lot more, and they want to set the tone and tenor of the conversation. It's going to fail like they always do fail, but this is a start here. And didn't you notice in the article that everything that went right, quote-unquote, whatever that is, the Americans were behind it. Everything that went wrong was Ukraine's fault. Really quite interesting. Go ahead, Michael.
I mean, two things that come out of this article is, surprise, surprise, for those that haven't been paying attention up till now, it's a proxy war. Wow, big surprise. The second is that I absolutely agree with Karen in the notion that the article is a real long narrative of the New York Times getting on, maybe not even on the right side of the narrative of the war, but effectively washing its hands of the Zelensky government. One thing that I noticed is that everything seemed to have been going fine up to the failed Ukrainian counteroffensive. Mm. And it goes into vivid detail about what was planned, and had the Ukrainian side followed the American military advisors to the letter, they would have been in Crimea by now. Monday morning quarterbacking, in my opinion, a way of saying we could have won this war had it not been for a breach in trust and cooperation between American intelligence, military officials, and those on the Ukrainian side.
Yeah, but Matthew, the New York Times won't admit that it was a farce from the very, very beginning. The New York Times is not going to point out where they lied to their readers over and over again for 3 years. And they did. OK, and we were vilified for correcting them. Matthew.
I find this almost this quite fascinating, is how to undo this momentum of emotional felt thoughts that have been created by years and years of propaganda that the New York Times has played a direct role in shaping. And now it's kind of humorous in some ways to try to see them try to put the brakes on, or at least redirect the trajectory of this machinery of stupid that they've built up. And again, it's not really quite the logical data or the facts that have been successful, but it's been the repetition of lies unbounded by any type of grounding in reality. And I don't know if they have the power necessarily to correct the mindset of their liberal audience, though this is a valiant effort. And, you know, they paid homage to the right words about, you know, pointing out Russian incompetence every chance the author had a chance to bring it up, which might resonate with a few people, but it's going to be interesting to see them try to put this genie back in the bottle.
Well, Karen, I'm glad Matthew brought that up, because it's actually quite racist, the article, is that it looked very much down on the Ukrainians, but they just had to be better than the Russians, because they certainly weren't as good as Americans or British. That's right in there, black and white.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's not amazing, but it is so ironic that this country is so... It tries to be so anti-racist when, in fact, our government is entirely racist. And you can see this attitude of, and it's really, you say racist, but it's really more of a superiority complex that, in particular, in the military. And this is left over from many, many decades ago. And I would have to say before Vietnam, you know, we have not had a great military leadership. We have not done grand examples of strategy. We haven't won any wars since World War II. And we did that with a lot of help from a lot of other countries. So we have this false sense of superiority, and we push it on everyone. And, you know, I think the world's getting tired of it.
You know, Michael, it's very interesting is that the article really doesn't put much thought into, well, too bad, Ukraine, too bad. Better luck next time. I mean, the arrogance of these writers and of this newspaper.
And it is a way, as I said, of washing their hands of an investment gone sour. I think that the proper term, maybe not racist, but Orientalist is a great way of looking at it, because the Orientalist way of examining the Ukrainians and the Russians are that the Ukrainians are our allies and partners, but they play a crucial role of being dependent on the West. They absolutely rely on the West for any kind of democratic, capitalist, optimistic future. And that's juxtaposed between that and Russia, which is seen as incompetent under the rulership of some megalomaniac. But you have to be careful with the Orientalist propaganda, because if you typecast the Russians as incompetent, and of course, we've all were privy to these narratives in the beginning about how Russians are stealing washing machines to use as spare parts for their guns and whatever. Well, if you cast this army as absolutely incompetent, and then that army wins, what does that say about your prescripted narrative? And what does that say about the indirect incompetence of the Ukrainian, the American, and the NATO side? This war, according to the New York Times, should have been over in 2 to 3 months, because weren't we told Russia is running out of ammunition? They're running out of gas. They're going to fail horribly and embarrassingly. And that just did not happen, right? That did not happen at all.
Well, Matthew, the whole point of this endeavor was to defeat Russia, not to have Ukraine win. That was the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea was to destroy them, if not militarily, then at least economically. And what we've seen is the very opposite. Where Russia's economy is growing in bounds. They've got much more sovereign control over their supply chains, their productive powers of labor. Their alliances with other Eurasian partners has been solidified in a way that I don't think will be very easy, if not I don't even think it's going to be possible, though some war hawks currently flying around Trump might wish to loosen the Russia-China bond. I don't think that, especially after the last 2-3 years of experience, let alone the previous decades of seeing the U.S. act like a two-faced backstabber, I don't think that that's going to be possible at this point. I absolutely.
Karen, where was Sullivan's name, Blinken's name, Victoria Nuland's name? I didn't see that very much in the article.
No, and Nuland is one of the ones that really has been publicly associated in Western media with some of this, the conniving and the plot development. And yeah, her name was left out of there. Yeah, they're covering themselves, and I think it's a lost cause, really. This is not. We haven't got a peace yet. We haven't got even an agreement for peace. You know, Trump said that Zelensky doesn't hold any cards. And I think, like a lot of things that we say, the fingers point back to us. I think the U.S. has far fewer cards than I think Trump would like to believe.
Karen, I want to talk about the so-called peace process in the second part of the program. But before we end, how does this bode for a war against Iran?
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Oh, my God. I agree.
Yeah. You know, we don't have the United States military. We can destroy things, but we do not have, and we never have had in terms of Iran, any type of ability, strategy, plan to successfully do anything that Iran doesn't want us to do. So this is well known, which is why even when we were hot and heavy with Iraq and all these other activities in Afghanistan, never did we say, let's just finish this, because we can't finish it in the way that the military would imagine.
Well, Karen, we have 40 seconds left for this part of the program. Why can't they learn?
I think it's because the way we pick our generals. You know, we don't choose generals and leaders in the military based on innovation, based on realism, based on problem solving, real problem solving. We choose them based on how well they kiss up, you know, who they're connected to throughout their careers. We have a system that, and actually, you know, maybe the old Russian system was like this after World War II. We promote generals based on loyalty to whoever's in charge, and we beat them over the head if they think innovatively.
Okay. Well, that's very pessimistic thinking there for the future. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on America's war in Ukraine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing America's war in Ukraine. Okay, Michael, let's go to you in Tashkent. Let's speed it up to the present here. Over the last few news cycles, Donald Trump is showing a great deal of frustration that nobody's doing what they're supposed to do. His peace plan, his ceasefire plan, it's all in tatters right now. I mean, he won't say it, his administration won't say it, but it really is right now. Where do we stand and where do we go from here?
What peace plan?
Yeah, what
I
peace
mean,
plan?
What peace plan? He wants a ceasefire. He wants the accolades that are associated with achieving a ceasefire and a peace deal. Russia has responded by saying that they are certainly open and amenable. They have never said no to a proposed peace deal. But Putin has been rather clear in stating the red lines that he will not cross. Chief of which is looking at and addressing the underlying issues, the protracted social conflicts that led to the outbreak of the conflict in Ukraine. And this is something that either goes over Trump's head or frustrates him because it delays the what he seems to think is the simple act of two people agreeing on the phone, signing the papers, having the handshake and the photo op, and then calling it a day. I think another major issue beyond just the Russian side is that Zelensky has been very hesitant to sign a deal that will effectively give whatever's left of Ukraine's economy over to the United States. I mean, it's just a...
Michael, what is that really worth? I mean, I've been befuddled by the quote-unquote minerals deal. What is it worth if the country is completely destroyed? Go ahead.
You know... It's something in which you have to relate to the grain deal as well, right? The reason why the Western countries have been so adamant about supporting Ukraine's exportation of grain is guess who owns the grain?
Yep.
Not Ukraine, right? Not Ukraine. And so this is a business transaction that if Trump has been looking at Ukraine's actions over the past 5, 10, 15 years, is selling its state assets to foreign companies in exchange for the hope of integration in these Western organizations, chief of which is NATO. Trump has said there is no talk of Ukraine's integration with NATO, but still give us your raw minerals. I mean, it is literally hand over your country's assets to end the war. It's the best deal you're going to get. And meanwhile, Putin and Lavrov are sitting back, yeah, I think just enjoying the show.
Yeah, well, Matthew, Russia's greatest asset is patience right now.
It does seem to be the case. I mean, touching upon this issue of this debacle around the minerals deal, whatever the hell that even is, the fact that you even have a dispute between whether or not it's the UK who's going to benefit from a 100-year deal that involves taking control of minerals that are not even in the possession of, right, Zelensky. A lot of those supposed minerals, and we don't even know how much there are located in territories that have voted to join Russia. On the one hand, and the other hand, now you have the U.S. and U.K. disputing who's going to be able to get it. It's a clown show. So I think you're right. There is a certain quality of awareness amongst Lavrov and the intelligentsia of Russia that they're dealing with an incompetent machinery right now, which is self-destructive. It's consuming and eating its own. It's eating itself.
Yeah.
And really, they just have to, I guess, as you just said, continue to be consistent, posing reasonable offers to de-escalation, watching the response of stupidity run amok, and then repeat. And hopefully at some point, they're hoping that some adult can enter the room that's capable of carrying out a conversation and wield some authority to actually pass into, you know, make a deal that currently Zelensky is not even qualified to make.
Well, Karen, and meanwhile, Karen, the Europeans are doing everything they can to obstruct Trump. They don't want Trump to have a win. They don't care about Ukraine.
Yeah, that's very clear. And they really do despise Trump. I think I didn't realize how badly they did, because they are willing to flush what's left of Ukraine down the toilet completely in order to resist Trump and the things that they're afraid that he's going to do. But he's already doing those things. So, you know, we really do have, the EU and NATO are led by really fools, and so is the United States. And these fools are talking to each other. They're trying to make plans. And really, the adults in the room are kind of just giving them that space, being China, Russia, of course, and, even India. You know, the country's looking, watching this from the outside. And it's really tragic, because we're not, and we haven't really talked about, or the Americans don't care about what happens to these Ukrainian people.
That's,
you know,
right,
the ones Russian protection are under Russian protection, and they speak Russian, and they're happy, and they voted. This is fine. They will get the damage repaired. Who will repair the damage in Ukraine? And this idea that we're going to take all their resources, and it's not we, the U.S. government. We're talking BlackRock, you know, State Street. We're talking the financialization of the American economy is going to eat that place up. And this is not a good solution for human beings. It's not a good solution even for the environment, which has been ruined due to war.
You know, Michael, this whole thing, this whole caper that the Biden administration pursued, it really in no way has ever benefited Ukraine or its people. And the Americans will leave as they always do. So what is the lesson learned here?
The lesson learned is that unless you are the UK or Israel, your country will be thrown under the bus at some point by the United States. We saw it live streamed a couple of weeks ago when Zelensky was a guest in the White House with Vance and Trump. When the war started 3 years ago, I was here in Tashkent. I had just arrived. And my initial reaction to all of this is that Ukraine is screwed at the end. I mean, yeah, Ukraine is the biggest loser in all of this. And we have to not lose sight in this, is that this is a country populated by its own people with its own visions and its own needs and grievances. And it looked to the West for some kind of re-engagement away from Russia and it was constantly rebuffed. The idea that Sweden and Finland can join NATO like this, while Ukraine is being told NATO membership can only come after you defeat Russia on the battlefield, should have told Zelensky right then and there that he is being gaslit in the worst possible way. Cut a deal with Russia right now. I know it's horrible. You were led astray by the West. You're still being led astray by the West. If it's not Keir Starmer looking for some form of relevancy, it's Emmanuel Macron who is picking up the faded torch of liberalism, IR liberalism. It's the type of liberalism that Mearsheimer, among others, chides as being overly destructive. And I agree with him on this. This does not mean that one supports Russia's actions in Ukraine, but at the same time, it's a fantastic example of a country that put their faith in a series of Western organizations, which kept it alive every 2 weeks with the latest amount of funding, which, as Trump reminded Zelensky, comes with a price tag. This is not a generous donation. This comes with payback.
Well, Matthew, what accounts for the resistance of the Europeans other than being anti-Trump? Do they really want to rearm? They want to militarize? Has anybody voted on this in Europe?
Yeah, the facade of Europe being the bastion of free and democratic rules-based order hullabaloo, that's really completely fallen apart now at this point.
Well, I suppose, ask Madame Le Pen how that's working out, yeah.
Exactly. The actual democratically, popularly electable leaders who tend to have the common quality that they are looking for peaceful negotiation and respect with Russia, whether it's Le Pen, whether it's the case in Romania, or whether we even see it in Dodik, in Spursk, in Bosnia-Herzegovina. There's people, I mean, democratically electable people who would be the leaders of their society, who are leaders of the society, are being thrown in prison because they're actually calling for a reasonable peace process. And yeah, this is a technocracy which has a disdain for the people and sees people as little more than cannon fodder to be used for the pleasures of a self-professed elite that wish to sort of create what seems to be some form of purgative bloodletting in order to impose order out of chaos, as has been done disastrously so many times throughout human history. It seems like it's happening all over again. And I don't think Europeans, if they understood that, would be going along. I think if people had a better understanding of what the stakes are, they would be organizing loudly across every street in Europe because they don't want to see another World War I or World War II, but it's happening yet again.
Karen, why do you think European leaders are doing this here? I mean, are they trying to save neoliberalism, trying to save the European Union, or even to save themselves?
I think they're trying to save themselves.
I agree.
And their legacy to some extent, because it's shocking how they are treating these peace parties, whether they're far left or far right, but those parties that want to end the war and take care of their own countries and try to prioritize the needs of the actual people that pay the taxes that fund all of this, they are banning them, throwing them in jail. And I thought initially it was just a one-off, they didn't like this guy, they didn't like that guy. Then you see the Le Pen thing and the in Germany with the, ADF or whatever, but they are really banning and trying to bury these voices. And these voices reflect concerns that their own citizens have, and they don't want to hear it because they've built a world that those guys don't matter. And they're trying to maintain that. I think they are trying to save themselves. Okay. And I don't think it's going to be effective. I think they will fail, and I think it'll be sooner than later.
Yeah, and Matthew, meanwhile, Zelensky is not the legitimate president of Ukraine. It's really quite extraordinary that, here's a guy that he's no longer legally the president, but at the same time, the European Union is picking winners and losers. It's amazing.
Yeah, again, the hypocrisy is just so loud. The fact that he's also banned his rivals, any type of critical media, journalists have been jailed for for doing their job as journalists if they're a bit critical towards the narrative of the Zelensky regime. And as you said, we're way overdue for an election in Ukraine, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. So I don't know how loud the hypocrisy needs to get before people start thinking twice about what they're being told.
Michael, I think we're 30 seconds left here. We're going to find out about all of the corruption. That's the next shoe to drop. Go ahead.
Well, I think I want to echo what Karen was saying about what is the goal, what's the purpose of these European leaders. Yes, they're trying to secure a legacy for themselves, but this also helps us understand the commitment issues that liberalism, IR liberalism, has. When you are wedded to an ideological cause, you don't walk away from that cause. Trump walks away because Trump doesn't care. And look at the repercussions that have happened even among American political circles about how we have abandoned Ukraine.
Yeah, but we have to wrap up here, but it's the Ukrainianization of the West, not the other way around. Okay, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Tashkent, Bangkok, and in Mount Jackson. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.